Well, now, aside from setting away high-tech products, we're bringing back some older technology. At least thinking about that in our next piece. Around the time of World War II, Wisconsin was one of the leading hemp-producing states in the country, and the federal government was encouraging farmers to produce more, as in this USDA public service announcement.
With Philippine and East Indian sources of hemp in the hands of the Japanese, and shipment of jute from India curtailed, American hemp must meet the needs of our Army and Navy, as well as of our industries. In 1942, patriotic farmers, at the government's request, planted 36,000 acres of seed hemp, an increase of several thousand percent. The goal for 1943 is 50,000 acres of seed hemp.
The crop was used primarily to make ropes and fabric, but that changed after the war as industrial hemp was banned by the federal government because of its relationship to marijuana.
The tides may be turning again, though, this time in hemp's favor. The new farm bill signed earlier this year makes it possible for states to legalize industrial hemp, and now some are calling on Wisconsin's lawmakers to legalize it. In light of recent changes, our next guest calls hemp the next agricultural revolution in the United States. Doug Fine is a self-described comedic investigative journalist. He's a best-selling author. His new book is called Hemp Bound. Doug, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, take us through a little of the history. We heard hemp was part of the war effort in World War II. Why was growing hemp, though, outlawed in the U.S.?
It was almost a typo. In the same, actually, 1937 Marijuana Stamp Act that was intended to banish, it really started sort of this 77 years of reefer madness. Hemp sort of got lumped in there as all versions of the cannabis plant were banned, which makes the 1942 propaganda film that sounded like Your Roommate with the Lava Lamp all the more amazing, because it was done after Prohibition had started, and yet it took until this year for hemp to be re-legalized via the Farm Bill.
You know, I'll say in my head, hemp and marijuana can be almost synonymous. Separate them out. What's the difference between hemp on one hand, marijuana on the other?
In the countries that are utilizing the fast-growing industrial cannabis or hemp economy, namely just about everywhere from Africa to Canada except here, and thankfully that's changing too, the definition is hemp is anything that, any variety of the cannabis plant that has 0.3% THC or less, which is the active ingredient, the psychoactive ingredient in cannabis. So effectively non-psychoactive, a pure agricultural product. And there is no way to confuse the two types of plant. There's a number of reasons there's no way to confuse them, but the most important reason is psychoactive cannabis is cultivated only the females, and the flowers are the market. Industrial cannabis or hemp is grown on vast, vast tracts, and the pollen from the male hemp plants would immediately create seeds and ruin a very, very expensive prima donna plant that's for, let's say, medicinal cannabis or social cannabis. So they can't even be grown within several miles of each other. And the proof's in the pudding. In Canada's 15-year modern industry, which is going to broach $1 billion this year, which is why farmers are so excited to get back on it, by the way, it's the bottom line reason, they have had zero cases of confusion. And they used their former version of the DEA to inspect. So there's no way to confuse it.
So what do we do with industrial hemp?
Oh, gosh, where to begin? So let's start with, again, the bottom line. The Canadians are growing almost exclusively for seed oil. So and they're making, by the way, profit per acre, $300 per acre, which has a lot of non-liberals in North Dakota jumping up and down like, again, Your Roommate with the Lava Lamp, 10 times more than what they might be making on the standard sort of GMO corn, wheat, soy cycle. So the seed oil is where the money is, and therefore all the rest of the applications that I love to preach about can tag along. So thank you for the high prices. And that's our demand for the seed oil. It's a nutritive superfood. I went to look at university studies about this, and it's the real deal, omega balanced and easily replicable, and it'll be inexpensive when it is domestic. I pay a lot for it in my morning shake because it's Canadian. So seed oil, first and foremost.
All right, we'll get into some of the other applications. You list a lot in your book, but I want to get into the changing politics. You've mentioned the roommate with the lava lamp. There's an image of who is promoting hemp. Maybe some people on the political fringe would introduce symbolic legislation. Who is in the political world supporting hemp to the extent that the federal government is letting states go ahead and legalize it if they want?
I I still can't believe that I am hearing these words come out of my mouth. In Hempbound, in the second paragraph, I said an astonishing no-brainer is happening. Hemp is coming back, and that is because of, in this era, almost incomprehensible bipartisan agreement on an issue. I mean, it reflects the fact that 80% of Americans support hemp. But just to give the biggie, Republican Senator Mitch McConnell from Kentucky is one of, not just a supporter, but one of the active players behind hemp's return in last year's farm bill and a provision put forth by Colorado Congressman Jared Polis, who's a Democrat. Bipartisan support, and not only just supporting it, but some of these folks on both sides of the aisle are really leaning on regulatory agencies like the DEA to allow the import of viable seed, which would have been seized prior to this past February, but all that changed with the Farm Bill.
And where, supposing hemp were legalized, where would be some of the prime locations that might be the new hemp valleys of the world? Kentucky, obviously, Mitch McConnell is interested because it might be a profitable thing in his state. Where else?
Hemp cultivars, as the varieties are known on the hemp side of the cannabis plant, hemp cultivars are at this point inured to, if not native to, every place except Antarctica. So just about any climate can successfully cultivate hemp for seed oil and fiber, and one that I think is really important, energy. So if I were speaking to a prospective Wisconsin farmer or processor or investor, I would say look for a place that has similar climate, not just moisture and elevation, but phytal period. In some studies, it's been found that the rate of daylight is really important. And look for a place on the map that cultivates hemp at that sort of in that sort of climate, and start trying to get it imported. That's the hardest part of jumpstarting this industry. There's profits from season one, but getting the seeds in here and in the ground is the hard part.
And you highlight some farmers and others around the country trying to lead the way on this. Who are going to be the first big producers of hemp as states legalize it?
I think it's going to rapidly grow on multiple fronts. But Colorado in the U.S. has a head start. Now it's going on a two-year head start. They're starting their second commercial season. Last year it was a handful of farmers, and one of them's name was Ryan Laughlin. And it was one of the most fun parts of researching about hemp was mid-August last year, going with my family to this extremely conservative part of eastern Colorado and meeting with this guy who was putting his federally subsidized farm at risk, planting 60 acres of hemp, and he had a lot of explicit reasons for doing it. One was getting that seed stock going. It's gone, and now Colorado has 1 year head start on that. But another reason was seeing if your roommate with the lava lamp was right in some of hemp's qualities, and the one that they were really looking at in that struggling, drying Oglala Reservoir out there in the eastern plains what is the water demand of the hemp plant? And what Ryan found is half of the previous year's wheat crop. Huge news to his neighbors who might be able to dry land crop, start to rebuild the soil. We haven't even gotten into hemp's phyto remediation or soil healing quality. So it really, the pipe dream of a hamster actually might be coming true in real life.
We're talking to Doug Fine. He's the author of the new book, Hempbound, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the Next Agricultural Revolution. And we'd like to hear from you. Wisconsin used to be a big producer of hemp in the United States. With a new farm bill, it's up to the state legislature whether Wisconsinites could produce it again. Do you think hemp should be legalized and grown, produced here in Wisconsin? What do you see as the advantage? Do you see a downside? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post over at the Central Time Facebook page. We'll take your calls in a few moments after this look at the headlines with Noah Ovshinsky. This is Central Time with Rob and Veronica. We're back with Doug Fine, author of Hempbound, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the Next Agricultural Revolution. You can join the conversation about the impending legalization of hemp production around in states around the country, maybe here in Wisconsin. Would you like to see it legalized? What do you see as the benefits? What would be the downside? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll get your calls in just a moment. But Doug, we talked a little bit about the uses of hemp earlier. Wanted to get more into that. Saw a video where you were showing off some of your clothing made of hemp. What would be the advantages of hemp fabric compared to, you know, cotton and the other standbys?
In my family, hemp simply went out in the marketplace. We were diapering, cloth diapering two kids at once. So in that cycle, which, you know, a certain percentage of listeners right now are nodding in sympathy, it's brutal, especially if you're line drying and the cotton disintegrated and the hemp held up. There are a lot of other examples of that. I find it to be really effective work clothing. Holds up well to travel. A Stanford-led study in Anatolia region of Turkey just turned up perfectly preserved hemp clothing in 9,000-year-old tomb. So it's, you know, it's the real deal. China's moving so fast to it, though, because cotton contributes 30% of the world's pesticides. And they're seeing diminished returns, and they need an alternative. So that's the reason why China's pushing hemp so fast. And they're really ahead. I think that even though hemp is in the fiber of BMWs and Mercedes now, that's European know-how. I visited the factory there and wrote about that. We can catch up if somebody really wants to do it. The nanotechnology, the 3D plastics, there's a lot of great hemp applications. I got to kick the hood of a hemp tractor in Canada. So, but I think the first big killer app for the fiber side for the American market is likely to be in construction. Very briefly, hempcrete is very easy to do. You just chop up the fiber and mix it with lime, and it creates an insulating material that's has a higher R value than the fiberglass insulation we use today.
We'll get to our callers now. We've got Brett on the line in Waukesha. Brett, hi, you're on the air.
A great show. Thanks, Noah, a great show. This is State Representative Brett Holtze calling. I'm running for governor, and I definitely support industrial hemp. It just makes sense for our families, our farmers. One of the things you didn't point out is hemp is also a great wildlife food for birds. It used to grow on our farm down in Oklahoma, and while I didn't smoke any myself, my brother said he didn't get any excitement from it. So,
Brett Tulsey, thanks for the call. Making the case there, and good for wildlife, he says, too, Doug.
Yeah, and livestock. An old-time rancher lady told me that in Nebraska she planted she said her daddy planted hemp along the irrigation ditches, and it's really unique. You'd think that there was some magical thing about this plant until you kind of look at it like Michael Pollan, the author, who says we've co-evolved with the plant. We've bred it for the qualities we like, and one of the amazing qualities of hemp is in an annual and very quick growing season, in fact, it will grow foot-long taproots, which is, you know, any agronomist will know is very important for soil health, but it also is fantastic for erosion control. So no matter how much water came through those irrigation ditches, their crops didn't get flooded. And then they put the cattle on it in the fall, and they loved the high-protein treat. I'm looking at my own goats right now, by the way, and they can't wait till I'm feeding them hemp seed cake.
Brett, thanks for the call. Go to Kyle now in Milwaukee. Kyle, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say, second, everything that's being said is you can make excellent paper that lasts an extremely long time for a lot less acreage. You're not destroying, you know, long-term wildlife and trees. It also makes an excellent oil, which from what I have read can actually be better than fossil oil for lubrication. And it makes excellent rope. Our Constitution was written on it. Our founding forefathers said any patriot would plant as much of it as possible, because of all of its uses. So,
all right, Kyle, thanks for the call. Doug, that reminds me, one other thing you say can be used for is not just oil for lubrication, but actually as fuel.
Yes, I'm so glad you mentioned it, because it's the final piece of the picture, Rob. As far as going from the old to the new, one other traditional use I just wanted to throw in there was the canvas on the wagons that settled Wisconsin, where canvas, where hemp came. So as well as the webbing in the parachute that saved George Bush Sr.'s life during his bailout in World War II. So I'm moving on to the app that really, as a father, has me the most excited. I kind of live in a perpetual screen-free week here in the middle of nowhere in New Mexico and drive on vegetable oil and get outsmarted by goats. So I'm really into the sustainability mode. And I noticed that biomass, Germany's really, you know, leading this kind of alternative energy revolution on the national level. And that they're really using a lot of this biomass combustion technique, anaerobic carbon friendly, called gasification. They're small units, not very expensive. I found out subsequently that the U.S. Army is buying units of these gasification furnaces. And they basically, at very high heat in an anaerobic process, combust any kind of farm waste. And then what I look at as the upside of this ridiculous hemp prohibition, 77-year-long prohibition, is that now we can look around the world and see, okay, Canada's making money on the seed oil. China knows how to do the textiles. Europe's got the high-end sort of space-age use for the bass fibers, the high-end fibers. And then what do we do with the stalks that are left after these processes, the bark, essentially? In Canada today, they just burn them in the field. It's not what to do with it. When I asked why, a seed oil mogul up there told me, well, because fossil fuel prices are still too low. Just, you know, wait. So I say let's not wait. Let's free ourselves from fossil fuels in every first-generation hemp processing facility. Have a seed oil processing unit, which is not very doesn't require a lot of space, even to process a lot of oil, just pressing seeds like any other seed crop. Some sort of fiber facility, construction, whatever it is. And a third facility that will implement these gasification units. The smallest of them are the size of like a large outhouse, and they can either feed a community-wide grid or just be part of an individual, you know, locations providing its own sort of grid energy. The other thing I want to say about that is that there's a plan in Kentucky today, a company called Patriot Biofuels, again, a very non-liberal utility CEO, buying up land on damaged tobacco and coal farms, coal mining areas, to plant hemp, which grows well in marginal soils, and then harvest it for use in this kind of gasification product. That's like the plan is underway for this to happen.
Go back to our callers now. We've got Melissa on the line in Eau Claire. Melissa, hi.
Hi. I fully support the legislation, and I guess I'm confused why there's so much controversy, because my understanding is there's no THC, you know, in hemp as it is in marijuana. So I wonder if you kind of clear that up for me, because I'm really confused about that.
So why still a controversy? You did mention that there's little or no THC in industrial hemp, Doug.
There's also little or no controversy. Honestly, it will seem incredible to those who study history that there was even a debate. But this time the wall came down and the law changed in this year's Farm Bill. It only allowed research in universities, cultivar research, that type of thing, university-connected research, to rebuild the seed stock. But there is now today an S-359 in the U.S. Senate, which would fully remove cannabis with negligible THC from the Controlled Substances Act and allow states and the USDA to regulate it like any other crop, which is, of course, a big no-brainer. But hopefully that will go through this year. Colorado is not waiting. I was there on the first day, their state agriculture department started issuing or accepting applications for full commercial hemp cultivation in the Rocky Mountain state, and it's happening. There's 100 farmers that have applied and 1,300 acres being cultivated, a small fraction of the exponential growth we're going to see nationwide over these next few years. But again, it gives Colorado this two-year head start.
We'll leave it there. Doug, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's Doug Fine. His new book is Hemp Bound: Dispatches from the Front Lines of the Next Agricultural Revolution. We've been talking to him about changing laws, apparently leading the way toward legal industrial hemp production in states around the United States.